Hello. Good evening. This is Jack Hurd, and you're listening to Reading Radio because it's Wednesday, and it's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock, and you have your dial set to 1630 a.m. K-Chung Radio. Getting more and more comfortable as a DJ, probably too comfortable at this point. I would like to share that this Sunday at 8 o'clock, there will be a performance and installation by a good friend of mine, Meta Herzog, in Little Tokyo at a place on Santa Fe Street. 120 North Santa Fe is the address. That's just east of the Mocha Geffen in Little Tokyo. And on Sunday at 8 o'clock, Meta will be doing a performance with video projection and a sound installation. She's got an installation set up there that she's going to sort of be interacting with. And then she's going to take off because she has to go do another performance at Documenta. So big things are happening for Meta. And Meta is a Danish artist. She's from Denmark, born and raised. Came to Los Angeles to get educated. And so tonight on Reading Radio, I wanted to share with you some other Danish artists. Actually, a Danish and Norwegian duo known as Elm Green and Dragset. They've been around for a while. They've gotten a lot of press. Maybe you've heard of them before. I wanted to read this interview with them and actually two different interviewers, but you won't know when one ends and the next begins because I won't tell you. So let's start. It says here, Danish and Norwegian duo Elm Green and Dragset, as artists they drop their forenames, Michael and Ingar, are specialists in ambitious works of visual theater. Having installed a replica of the Prada store in the middle of a Texan desert in 2005, a life-size concrete housing estate in a German museum in 2010, complete with actor residents playing single moms and street hustlers. On February 23rd, their update on the traditional bronze equestrian statue, Powerless Structures, Figure 101, was unveiled for its year-long run in Trafalgar Square until April 1st, 2013. It features a modern-day Little Lord Fauntleroy teetering on his rocking horse atop the empty fourth plinth, opposed to King George IV and his steed. Were you constantly checking up on your boy before he went up there? Yes, it's been a long, slow process. We've been a whole year in production, making the first model into the molds and finally having the bronze poured in. Then we scaled it up and found this cute little boy had lost his fragility and turned into a fucking monster. So we had to change the face a lot during the summer, and the mane and the tail of the horse changed too. The original maquette was sort of lifeless, so I feel there's a personality to him now. What did you want his expression to convey? He's just a kid on an IKEA-style toy horse without any worries, unlike the serious warriors around him. He's a bit in his own world. We made him in an old-fashioned nostalgic style, not so he could blend into the square, but because kids nowadays don't have rocking horses. They play war games to get their thrills, so it's also a memorial for toys and fantasy. You recently made a sculpture of a frightened little boy called High Expectations. Why is this youthful image important to you? We may be getting a little more sentimental with age and reassessing our childhood in some way. There are such high expectations in the coming generations. They're growing up in a completely different scenario than we did because everyone is talking about the world going under due to global warming and how we have to stop Western consumer habits. At the same time, they have this incredible pressure to be individualist and stand out. Everything is like a talent show nowadays. Even if you're on Facebook or other social media, you have to act as if you're a celebrity and everything you do has to be interesting. The sculpture also references a National Socialist style figurine on a mount of a mounted soldier you used in the same installation. It also references a National Socialist style figurine of a mounted soldier you used in the same installation. It's not that we're saying that today's regimes are anything like the Nazi, but clearly there are elements in any society that entertain ideas of grandeur, heroism, and world domination. There are a few words being used now that I find very loaded and difficult, such as pride or honor. You know, it carries on, it trickles down. When countries go to war and win, like in Libya, it's still described as a success or victory or something like that, even with all those casualties. So the fundamentals of war haven't changed that much, even since George IV's time. It's about the winner or the loser. That has to do with celebrity culture as well, because if you're not in the gossip columns, you're no one. The title is actually Powerless Structure, Figure 101. So what was number one? That was the very first exhibition we did as a tryout for different materials and a move away from performance art to making objects. The first powerless structures with any real importance was probably number two, which is a diving board that went through the window of a museum. Another in the series was a very public double-sided urinal. Did you have any other ideas for the plinth that didn't make it? We had one about how we could save the economy. We were going to make a giant one of those lucky cats you find in Chinese shops with the automatic waving arm in Chinatown, but it was just a one-liner. We had lots of silly ideas. I was thinking about the British people that had been really important in my life, but the only one I could come up with was Boy George. After what he's been through lately, I thought he'd not be the best person to represent the nation. With these public pieces, are you in danger of becoming plaza fillers like Anish Kapoor or Richard Serra? Placing work in public where you have a much wider audience who didn't ask for an art expert is the most unpredictable situation possible. But I think to some degree, we're too naughty to care about most mainstream commissions. We've made a male version of Denmark's national symbol, the Little Mermaid, that has created uproar in the newspapers. It's a merman without a fishtail, and every 40 minutes or so he winks. Plus, it's not in Copenhagen, but in Helsingør, near Hamlet's castle, which is a rival city and once the capital of power and tourism. The Little Mermaid was always being vandalized. Are you worried people might climb up and ride your rocking horse? There's such a heavy policing on Trafalgar Square, I don't think that they'd have a chance, the poor creatures. One day, Denmark-born Michael Elmgren met a man named Ingnar Dragset from Norway. Together, they decided to create art 16 years ago. The duo has been wowing audiences internationally with their architectural, sculptural pieces at shows including the Venice Biennale, Sao Paulo Biennale, Gwangju Biennale, Istanbul Biennale, and Manifesto 3. Those are just a few stops on their Power World Tour. Next Tuesday, the artists will launch their largest performance piece for the launch of Performa 11, entitled Happy Days in the Art World. We asked the partners in crime who are hosting the Hot Ticket Tuesday to tell us a little bit more about their upcoming week. You were performing, you're opening the Performa Biennial, which is one of the most anticipated events in New York for Culture Files. How does it feel to carry such a lovely evening, and is there a nervousness to presenting the new works? The great thing about Performa is that it makes all these visual artists coming out of their usual comfort zone and do something different. It's very different to do something live than it is to prepare an object-based show in a museum. There is no safety net when it comes to stage performance. Can you remember a time when you first knew you wanted to dedicate yourselves to creating performance art for a living? When was that, and what was your earliest memory? Ingnar and I started doing performances together because Ingnar came from theater, so it was kind of a logical way to start our collaboration. But The live acts is not exactly the way that we make our money. You both began working in 1995. Can you share with us exactly the moment you both knew that you wanted to work as a team? What was the relation that informed you of this? The revelation that informed you of this? We had been boyfriends for a year and shared a lot of values and views, so it just came naturally. This was the largest piece of performance work you have presented in New York. Exactly how big is the scope of work for you? It took a year to write the play. Of course, we did exhibitions and created works besides this, but writing is a slow process. Happy Days in the Art World is a darkly comic self-portrait of the two artists. In a nutshell, can you describe the basic premise of Happy Days in the Art World? How did Samuel Beckett's play, Happy Days, become the primary source of inspiration? In several Beckett plays, you have these grumpy, confused, mature male characters who somehow could remind us a bit of cartoon versions of ourselves. One might also find some of Beckett's absurd, humorous style in our installations and sculptural works. How did Joseph Finesse and Charles Edwards become a part of this play? Tell us something about working with these fine gentlemen. We worked with Joseph Finesse before 2008 at the Old Vic in London. It was great that Charles agreed to play the other main character, since these two actors are just such a fantastic match. One of your most famous sculptural installations within the New York art and fashion circles is the Prada Marfa structure in Marfa, Texas. What was the source or message in that architectural installation? And is there an overlying theme you explore in most of your architectural installations? The idea for Prada Marfa came up right after having done a show in a Chelsea gallery where we had covered the window front of the gallery with white sheets of paper upon which there was printed, "Opening soon, Prada." Everybody believed the gallery was closing and a Prada store would open. So it was not a particularly popular show by the gallery owner, who didn't sell anything throughout that month and had to explain to everybody that she was not going out of business. After that experience, the next step would, of course, be to place a real Prada boutique in the desert, in the middle of nowhere. And nowhere happened to be outside of Marfa, in the Texan desert. Is there a planned celebration or vacation after the big night and week at Performa? How do you men relax after such an amazing feat? Oh, after this we have to prepare our sculpture for the fourth plinth in Trafalgar Square in London, which will be inaugurated mid-February, but we'll stay in New York until November 10th and look forward to spending a bit longer time here. So that's Elm Green and Dragset. Honestly, it seems they have very little in common with Meta, aside from their shared national heritage. But I thought that there were a few more points in which the two artists and Meta had some similarities. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case, or the interviewers just asked the wrong questions. If only I could have asked the questions, I think it would have been a much better show. But nonetheless, I think that it's really worth everybody in the listening audience's while to head over to 120 North Santa Fe on Sunday evening and hang out, have a beer, and see some really, really interesting new artwork. As for reading radio on K-Chunk 1630 AM, I think that about does it for this evening. I was speed reading pretty hardcore tonight, so I think we made it through a lot of words in less than the standard amount of time. But maybe we could have some sort of... Oh, hey. Hey, we have a visitor in the station.
Hi.
How are you doing? What brings you down here?
John's going to interview me tonight.
Oh, that's pretty exciting. Well, that's coming up on John Jungle Guts, which will start in about 5 minutes when John gets out of the bathroom, I would imagine. Until then. What should we do?